Support comes from Universal Pictures, presenting their new film, Welcome to Marwen. From the groundbreaking director of Forrest Gump comes the boldest and most original film of the year, based on an inspirational true story and starring Academy Award nominee Steve Carell and Leslie Mann. Welcome to Marwen celebrates the power of friendship, hope, and healing. In theaters this Christmas. The holidays can be overwhelming with long lists of to-dos. Thankfully, Fruit of the Loom has made holiday shopping easy as can be. Shop everything from underwear and socks to comfy casual wear and pajamas for men, women, and kids. With Fruit of the Loom, the whole family can enjoy comfort and style from head to toe. When you check Fruit of the Loom off your list, your holiday shopping is complete. Go to fruit.com. Save 15% off underwear by entering coupon code STORIES at checkout. Offer ends December 20th. Hello to everybody eating a quick lunch in the park near the subway station. It's Beautiful Anonymous. 1 hour, one sitting on a bench-based conversation. No names and no holds barred.
I'd rather go one-on-one. I think it'll be more fun, and I'll get to know you, and you'll get to know me.
Hello, everybody. Chris Gethard here. Welcome to another episode of Beautiful Anonymous. Thanks for listening. Thanks for letting me do this job. I know I say it every week, but I am grateful, and I mean it every time I say it. I got a couple shows in New York City. I'm doing this week, Long Island City, The Creek. Got another one, I think, in another week. Those tickets are moving fast. And then in January, we just opened up two more shows at Union Hall because the first two sold out. Thank you guys for that. Go to chrisgeth.com for tickets on those. Last week's call, Gay Mormon, the feedback to that was really, really crazy to see. I saw on Reddit, it started to spread in a community of ex-Mormons who get there and discuss stuff like that. Hello to all of them. And it was cool to read your thoughts. And in the Facebook group, I saw a few comments. One in particular jumped out at me from someone who said, I am Mormon. And said, I recognize that it historically has been hard for non-heterosexual people in my faith, but I have a lot of gay friends, and I'd like to think I'm someone who's leading a future generation towards a much more progressive take on this particular issue. And I thought that was so cool to see. Thank you so much for putting that out there in the old Facebook group, Beautiful Anonymous, the community. Beautiful follow-ups have been going really well. A lot of people have been loving these things on Stitcher Premium. Thank you guys so much for signing up, making the show look good. StitcherPremium.com/stories. Use the promo code STORIES for a free month. This week's follow-up is with that guy with the goose laugh. Remember that guy? A lot of people say that's the funniest call we've ever had. I've had people stop me on the street to say they listen to that one when they're in a bad mood to cheer themselves up. We got the goose laugh guy back. That guy's the best. Now, this week's call, Toronto. We had our live show from Toronto, you say. Ah, but guess what? Jared and I did one of those live in-person talks. We did one prior in New York City. We did one in London. Took it to Toronto. Went to a park, set up on a park bench, strapped the microphones up there.
Oh, that's so funny. I wish we were recording this part.
Yes, we're in town. We're doing our the live taping of the show tonight.
Tonight, right? Yeah, I can't come tonight, but I hope everything goes well and you enjoy the city.
Yeah. So far, so good.
Awesome.
That's one of my favorite
times. Awesome.
Yeah.
Enjoy.
Thanks so much. So nice meeting you.
Yeah, you too.
Here's a first. We had a false start. Someone who I thought was the caller turned out just a fan of the show. But back to the real caller. Fascinating person. Someone who made her way to Toronto. Did not start life there. Someone who's living the immigrant experience, but also in such a fascinating way, is helping other people from her community navigate that experience. And in a way where she literally helps people speak for themselves in situations that are often very high pressure, where she has to get it right. It is one of the most specific jobs I've ever heard anyone having. And it was mind-blowing to hear about it in the course of this show.
I figured that was her. I figured she was jumping the gun early. So we're sitting right now in a public park in one of my favorite cities in the world, Toronto. I feel like this was one of the first towns that embraced my comedy outside of New York, maybe the first town that embraced me outside of my home base in New York. We're sitting in a little public park. We found like a pretty perfect bench. It's like nestled off in a corner. There's a bunch of plants and flowers, and people are walking by, but they're about 15 feet away, so we have a little privacy. Right now we're sitting here, there's people walking by with their dogs. It's a little bit before 12:30 p.m. on a Friday, and yet the park is still filled up. I will say, for 12:30 on a Friday, there's a real lingering cloud of marijuana smoke that Jared and I have sensed. We both commented on as soon as we entered this park. Jared asked if weed was legal in Toronto. I said, I'm not sure. I think it's decriminalized. Oh, there goes somebody pushing a baby stroller. There goes a businessman, real business-looking businessman walking right. He's on the phone. He's making moves, baby. He's pushing units, making sales, baby. I think our caller is coming by momentarily. I'm setting up the timer so it'll time out the hour. Oh, and perfect timing. We have some sort of street busker who's going to sing through the whole episode. Oh, here we go. Oh, we have somebody who's walking up. In very Canadian fashion, she immediately apologized to Jared. First words out of her mouth were, I'm so sorry. Hi, how are you? No need to be scared. She just recoiled in terror. You just recoiled in what looked like terror when you saw me. Looked like actual fear.
I was very happy to see you.
You backed up, though.
Oh, yeah, because it's you.
Oh, I'm literally the least intimidating person I know.
It was so normal. I thought it was like a big setup, but...
No, just a couple giant fuzzy microphones clipped on a bench.
Ooh, this is so cool. Thank you.
So nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Oh, this is so nice. I'm so happy.
Yeah, we just get to hang out in a park for an hour.
I know, and it's a beautiful, beautiful day.
Do you live around here or work around here or something?
I work mainly in Toronto, but I live in a city that is close by, 25 minutes away.
Oh, wow.
So I just took the train and then came here.
Oh, that's nice.
And saw you.
That's very nice.
Yeah.
This person was not singing when we first set up here.
Oh, yeah, he was setting up when I came. And I was like, oh, he's going to sing.
Yeah, it's going to sabotage everything. Jared's so mad. So you live outside of Toronto. You work mostly in Toronto.
Mostly in Toronto. I work for courts.
The courts?
Yeah, legal system. I'm a court interpreter.
A court interpreter?
For Japanese and English. So.
Wow.
I go to all over Ontario to help these people who are in trouble.
So anyone who speaks primarily Japanese?
Yes.
You show up, help them out?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
You get to see a lot of things. Something that you wouldn't really experience if you're not in the system. You often interpret for witnesses.
Okay.
Witnesses and victims.
Okay.
Of sexual violence, abuse, domestic violence. And I go to divorce court, so I'm, you know, in my mid-20s, not married and don't have kids, but I've seen everything that people go through.
Oh, wow. So you're like a fly on the wall for everybody's drama.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, is there a large Japanese community in Ontario?
Mostly in Toronto, yeah. It's not huge compared to Koreans and Chinese,
yeah,
I'd say, but it's pretty big. Because so many businesses are coming here and so many people are, not so many people, some people are immigrating.
Yeah.
Here, I'm one of them. And so, yeah, there is some, not as much as other Asian countries.
Now, you said you're immigrating.
Yeah.
So you're not from Canada.
I'm not from Canada. I'm originally from Japan.
You are?
Yeah. Actually, near Tokyo. My school was in Tokyo. I lived in a suburb of Tokyo. And... I was there from since I was born till 16.
Wow.
And then...
Did you grow up speaking English as well?
No. I went to Singapore for a year for my dad's company. Well, they sent him. So we went with him. And I think when I was 8 or 9, I kind of acquired some, you know, some basic English skills. Just for 1 year I was there, and then I came back and then did schooling, normal schooling. Went to a school where they taught a little bit of English, a lot of English actually. But learning English in Japan is hard because everyone's Japanese speaking Japanese. So
yeah.
And then when I was 16, I thought, okay, I want to step up the game and go to Canada. So I was an exchange student for a year. 1 year for grade 10, and then went back to Japan. It was a year exchange. Went back to Japan for grade 11, and then in grade 12, I was like, I want to go to a Canadian university. But in order for me to do that, I need to go back and learn. So yeah. I'm back for grade 12 and then did 4 years of university. And I'm here talking to you.
Now you knew very, very little English before just diving into a year of high school in Canada.
I knew basic conversation.
Yeah.
Basic. So I couldn't really talk to teenagers because they frightened me.
Right.
Because
they
just
so
talk.
Fast.
Yeah, they were so fast. And I used to be like, and every time I started talking, people didn't like it because I'm slow.
Yeah, they got to slow down and actually stop and consider another human being for a while. Yeah. God forbid.
So that was hard, but I think it probably lasted for 2-3 years. And then one day I realized, oh, I don't have to be Japanese living here. I can be who I am for what I am and just do whatever I want to do. So, and then, yeah, I'm doing interpreting.
That's so cool. And when you moved here, so did you live with a family that was bilingual?
Yes. So they were Canadian people, Canadian families who only spoke English, sorry.
Yeah.
English. And I was immersed in the environment and I did everything that they do.
Oh, so wait, they only spoke English?
They only spoke English, yeah.
So you just dove in and you were like 14, 15 years old.
I was 16.
16.
That was my parents, my parents were like, okay, you go. If you want to learn, you got to just survive. And
wow.
I survived, I guess.
Wow. I would not have had the guts to do that when I was 16 years old. No way.
I was brave. I don't think I'm not that brave anymore. I think you kind of, take cost-benefit analysis and do...
Yeah.
Kind of assess.
Uh-huh.
If you want to do new things. But yeah, when I was 16, I was like, okay, life won't get any better.
That is incredible. And do you plan on staying in Canada for a while?
Oh, yeah, I'm going to live here.
This is it?
Yeah, I'm going to probably die here, too.
You like it better?
Oh, yeah.
How come?
Japan is a wonderful country.
I've always wanted to go.
Oh, you should.
Yeah.
It's an exciting country where everything's orderly, organized, people are nice, polite. But my personality doesn't really... I don't think it fit in super well. I can fit in, but I had to put a lot of effort into it.
Right.
Because it's very reserved. You don't really say the things that you really think to a lot of people. So you have that kind of, what is it? Not a wall, but something.
Like your guard is up.
Yeah, guard is up. And I'm very open. So I can't talk to a stranger on the street in Tokyo.
Yeah.
Maybe it's different in countryside. But yeah, it's, I literally can talk to anyone if I want to here, but I wouldn't do that in Tokyo, and that's really not who I am.
So you were just always biting your tongue.
Yeah.
You're always holding back.
And I always had anxiety. Like, since I remember, I always had anxiety, and I didn't know that until now, since I experienced calmness and peace in my mind, because you were always on the go, and your society expects so much.
Yeah.
If you're in certain school or certain, I guess, I don't know, socioeconomical class? Yeah. You're kind of expected to go to university and then work. And then that's like you go through a designated, I don't know, rail.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to. I wanted to kind of deviate from that.
Yeah. Now, is your family, did they kind of get a sense that you needed to go somewhere else?
Yes. But
are they supportive, or wish you would come back?
They were very supportive because how my parents met was funny. They were learning English in the States, in Colorado, and they met. And so they've always wanted to immerse themselves in the North American environment. And I guess I took that in as a young kid. And I thought, this is where I think I would end up being at. So I go back once a year.
You do?
Yeah.
For how long?
2 weeks to 3 weeks.
That's it.
Yeah, that's
all
it.
You need.
Yeah. I eat a lot of good Japanese food, hang out with my friends and family, take all it in. You appreciate that more. I think. It's like a long distance relationship.
Do they ever come here and visit you?
They did for my graduation, but my parents smoke, so it's hard for them to fly.
Right. That's a long flight for a smoker. And they come, that's as simple as that. Just comes down to that.
Yeah.
So they just freak out on the plane.
Oh, my mom does. So I think we can, maybe we can meet up somewhere. And then my dad's still working, so he can't really take long days off. But I think I'm going to invite my mom.
Yeah.
Like, actually get her a ticket for her to come here and then explore the east side of Canada someday.
Now, did you study law in university?
No, I studied international economics. wanted to know the world. So I just learned economics. I thought that was the basis of everything. And I didn't study law. And I wanted to be a lawyer when I was a kid, but I never wanted to be one thing. I wanted to be a pilot. I wanted to be everything. And then I realized I have a lot of opportunity here in Canada as an interpreter, where I can explore a lot of different industries without being in it.
Right.
it's like you listen to other people and you can kind of see people's perspective from their, you know, perspective.
It is the best part of the gig.
Yeah.
You just sit back and let other people tell you what's up with them.
Yeah.
Pretty sweet.
And I like that. And it might be something they don't want to tell in public, you know, people, especially in court. Nobody wants to know your history of being abused, but I can get to kind of experience, I don't want to say it's experience, but I can get to, I don't know, empathize to a certain degree and still not get too affected.
Yeah.
You know, so it's my favorite job ever. I think it's
really
the best job ever. Yeah.
So you're going to stick with it?
I think so. Well, I love communicating. You know, I love talking to people. I don't want to be one thing. So that's, I think, the ultimate job that...
Wow.
The universe kind of...
So you're like the definition of a free spirit.
Yeah.
You don't want to live in one place. You don't want to be locked in certain ways.
Yeah,
you don't want to do one thing.
That was the opposite of how I brought up, though.
Yeah.
I was always, you know, a good student, did the certain thing, and people liked it for... what they expected. And then I don't know, like something clicked when I was in Singapore, when I first experienced freedom in the Ontario curriculum, I guess. I thought, okay, I can be more than what people expect me to be.
Now, I noticed, so this might be ignorant, mm-hmm. pardon me if it is, but one thing I noticed, because I'm a punk rock fan, mm-hmm. and there's a big punk rock scene in Japan, mm-hmm. but the sense I get is that if you decide you're different in Japan or you want to rebel, you got to go big.
Oh, yeah. Like, you might as well go big.
Seems like the punk rockers there, like, get decked out in leather jackets and mohawks and, like, it's a thing.
And then you shake your head. I don't know what they do. That's what
And they smoke
do.
A lot and
yes.
they're rude. And it's, like, an old school.
Yeah. Well, I have some people who are very into punk rocks. There's some normal people.
Yeah.
But when I see their pictures with their friends, it's, like...
They're making a statement.
Yeah.
And you, it's like, I need to get away from this, so I'm going to go halfway across the world.
Yeah.
Other side of the world. You got to go big, huh?
Yeah, and then people are so nice here. Not to say that I don't experience anything really bad. Well, racism isn't, it's not obvious here.
Yeah.
I think.
Well, Toronto is also one, I feel like Toronto is a very international city.
Oh, yeah.
That's always the sense I've had.
You can get to go to all kinds of different restaurants. You get to meet a lot of people from everywhere. My friend is from... one of my friends is half Syrian and half Palestinian. Oh, no, sorry. Half Palestinian and half Polish.
Oh, wow.
I know. So her mom's Christian and her dad is a staunch Muslim. And... You know, I don't get to see that kind of meet those people in Japan.
Yeah.
You know, so I just love the fact that people are welcoming and then everyone's, I guess, immigrants, you know.
Yeah.
I'm very grateful that I'm here. And that I can still appreciate what I have in Japan and not hating.
Yeah.
Hating.
And you like this area in particular. When you say you're going to stay here, do you mean Toronto in particular, or do you mean just the West in general?
Just probably Toronto. There's like Mississauga, Oakville, like that area. It's a suburb. It's called GTA, Greater Toronto Area.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to just...
But you're not looking to go check out other Canadian cities. You're not looking to travel the States. You're happy here.
Well, I love exploring. I was just in Seattle. My boyfriend lives there. I just love exploring, but I think this is where my... there were homestay families who welcomed me when I first came here, and my friends are here, so I think I will end up living here.
That's cool. So but you were looking for something, and you found it.
Yeah, I think so.
That's awesome.
And I can't be more grateful. So I want to share that with other people by helping others. Yeah, so.
So talk to me about that.
Mm.
So when you this sounds like a gig that when you first get into it, you must feel like you're in over your head right out of the gate.
Oh, yeah. The first interpreting job was in Superior Court of Justice for a rape trial.
First one.
Like, hey, I need you. It's a week-long trial. Go in. And I went in. Ugh.
And can I ask, who was the Japanese speaker in that trial?
Victim.
The victim.
So well, Yeah.
So this job,
mm-hmm.
where you're interpreting, and I don't mean to, in no way
mm-hmm.
would I ever laugh at that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm only laughing at your circumstance. Mm-hmm. First gig.
Yeah, first.
Out of the gate. You get hired. This is explained to you, but you don't have to. First gig. Walk into a courtroom, hear someone who's been through the worst thing, and you have to tell us what they said.
Oh, yeah, and they cry, and an alleged attacker is right there. And I didn't even know who he was, the one.
That sounds like one of the most incredibly uncomfortable experiences I've ever heard anyone have. That's first day on the job.
First day. First day as an interpreter.
And just the most brutal...
And then you see all the evidence, you know, some and gruesome things.
The lawyers are asking questions and you must be looking at them like, now I have to turn around and ask that? And then the answers come in. Do you feel bound? Here's a question for an mm-hmm. interpreter. When they put certain emotion behind things,
mm-hmm.
is that, I would imagine there's like directives there or instructions there for you, right?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Are you required to convey the emotion or is it you have to let them show the emotion and your information only?
So for court interpreting, it's pretty specific. You need to interpret word for word with the emotion that they have.
Really?
So you can't be emotional, but you need to show the emotion that... So,
right. So you can't show the way you're personally being affected. You have to emulate...
Yeah.
Oh, that is the most head-spinning job I've heard of.
It's... When you're in it, you can do that. Because you're in it, you feel like... You're part of this person, but you're really not. Like, your mind, your mouth is with them, and your mind is on the other side.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's, and then, you know, there's divorce lawyer, and then you, divorce trial, where people are getting in the midst of divorce. You can't take that. You can't take that negative, I don't want to say negative feeling, but hurtful feelings.
Right.
Into your life. Because
yeah.
you can't do that.
And I would imagine that, and again, I'm not laughing at other people's pain. I'm piecing together the puzzle pieces of what you're describing as your job. And there is something about it that is so fascinating. I would imagine in a divorce proceeding, if one member of a couple speaks only Japanese, mm-hmm. odds are that this might be a situation where you're interpreting for both parties.
There shouldn't be, but there's... so many Japanese interpreters in Ontario. So I know I've never done it.
Right.
I've never done okay. it.
So they usually attach, you get your interpreter, you get yours, so that there's nobody who...
Yeah.
Nobody's opinion starts to lean one way or the other. Is that the idea?
Mm-hmm. But wow. The fascinating thing is when there's a huge language barrier, that's when marriage gets tough. Sorry. Yeah. So that's what I kind of learned.
Yeah.
Because if you can't really communicate your deepest emotions with your partner, that's hard.
So there's been a relationship counseling level to your experience interpreting.
So every time I encounter these situations, I tell my boyfriend, He's like, hey, don't yell at me like 24/7 because that's going to ruin my head.
Right.
You know, you learn a lot of things that you don't expect you would ever hear from someone.
Like what are some things that we might not expect that jump out at you that you've learned along the way?
That you cannot measure people with you can't measure people through your expectations. You cannot assume that people are the same.
Yeah.
There's so many people with different backgrounds and emotions and how they cope with things. So you need to look at every one of them in the world as what that individual is.
Right.
The law is law. So regardless of who you are, that's going to apply. But when you're actually talking to a person, you need to kind of think, okay, this is the person. I cannot expect my, you know, what I think is important to them. So you kind of lose the judgment.
Yeah.
That you have towards people. And it's a lifelong process, learning process for me. But yeah.
So you just start to learn to assume that other people have their values and their filters, and you got to take a deep breath and let them have that before you start to bounce it off your own.
Yeah. And then Beautiful Anonymous is the...
I've had a similar experience.
Yeah?
Had a similar experience, yeah.
You cannot see it through only your eyes, you know?
Yeah.
You can observe it and really try to understand, I think.
Yeah.
You don't have to understand or fully comprehend, but you can at least listen to them.
And respect it.
Respect. It's hard. It's not easy. It comes with practice, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
I have some questions about the divorce proceedings in particular, if that's okay.
Yeah.
So oftentimes you're there interpreting for one person, and there's another interpreter interpreting for the other party.
Usually it's a English speaker, male English speaker married to a...
Oh, fitting that stereotype.
Oh, it really is, like 100%. Well,
98%. Wow. So those are a lot of the couples you see. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what that's about. I wonder if it matches the divorce rates of other couples or if there's a reason you're seeing that breakdown.
One reason is... from my experience, I'm not here to...
Your opinions only.
Okay,
this is not well-researched demographics.
Oh, I hope the people in Facebook won't attack me for this. But so.
You hear that, everybody on Facebook? Don't attack. Say whatever you want, but don't attack. Just be nice. Okay, I've broken the momentum. That means we should do the ads now. We'll be back with more conversation right after this. You spend one-third of your life in sheets. This holiday season is a great time for a bedding upgrade for you or a loved one. Because Brooklinen works directly with manufacturers and customers, they're able to offer 5-star hotel quality sheets that are affordable and easy to order. Plus, with over 20 colors and patterns, these sheets don't just feel amazing, they look great too. And their super fast shipping makes sure that you can get your holiday gifts right on time. I got the Brooklinen sheets. You guys have heard me talk about them. They're quality stuff. They are, I tell you, when we have company over, those are the sheets we put out. We give them the Brooklinen, try to show off a little bit, get flashy, show them that we're in a Brooklinen household, and they are in the height of elegance. In my home, they got a 5-star elegant experience in my home. My Brooklinen sheets are the best, most comfortable sheets I've ever slept on. Now it's time for your upgrade. Brooklinen.com has an exclusive offer just for my listeners. You get $20 off and free shipping when you use promo code BEAUTIFUL at Brooklinen.com. Brooklinen is so confident in their product that all their sheets, comforters, and towels come with a lifetime warranty. The only way to get $20 off and free shipping is use promo code BEAUTIFUL at Brooklinen.com. That's Brooklinen.com. Promo code BEAUTIFUL, Brooklinen. These really are the best sheets ever. For a lot of people, the day doesn't start till you get that morning energy boost. For a lot of people, I'm talking about coffee. Now there's a new way to enjoy your daily cup of joe, thanks to Cafe Monster, available in vanilla, mocha, and salted caramel. Cafe Monster shaking up the ready-to-drink coffee category with indulgent gourmet coffee that's only 190 calories. Not to mention it's got 150 milligrams of caffeine. That's a lot of caffeine. They get it from coffee beans, B vitamins, coffee fruit extract. Cafe Monster offers you a simplified energy blend that contains a third less sugar than the leading national brand. That's a killer combo right there. 100 fewer calories per bottle in the competition, but can't taste that difference. Tastes really good. Okay, you get the same feel and flavor as your local coffee house, and you don't even have to wait in line. You guys have heard me on the show sometimes. I'm not even a coffee guy. I like a good cup of tea in the morning, right? But I'll tell you what, I had some Cafe Monster in my house, and it's such a good grab and go. And I was very pleasantly surprised at how positive the experience was. It's really cool. It's quite convenient. I was able to run right out the door and kick my day off right. Cafe Monster, chill it down, shake it up, enjoy. Thanks again to all of our advertisers. Now let's get back to the conversation.
I hope the people in Facebook won't attack me for this. But so the first observation I had is the language barrier. So these powerful, mostly Caucasian men, like petite, cute-looking Asian girls, well, Japanese girls from my experience, and you know, these people are, we are, you know, in Japan, when you're a female, you're expected to do laundry and then, like, the world's changing, but there's a certain expectation that you kind of need to fit into if you're a mom or, you don't know, like a wife. And so you do that. When you first marry, it's all good because you're... wife is taking care of you and loving you and giving what you want. And then all of a sudden, I think women get stronger by raising kids and then being in a different country from Japan. And they kind of realize, wow, I can do so much more. And then, but men still want to control them, right?
Right.
It's like, it's a very obvious power dynamic I found. But women aren't stupid, right? So... kind of they realize it. It's like, oh, I can't do this anymore. So it's usually women trying to get out.
And is your assumption or your experience that these Caucasian guys, part of what they're looking for is maybe like a little bit more deference or subservience or things that fit the, maybe like the Japanese cultural norms that you're describing?
Yeah, I would say so.
So they get into it for the power dynamic.
Mm-hmm. I don't say it publicly that often.
Right.
But...
this is all opinion.
Yeah, that's my opinion, and that's what
your body language is shifting. I feel you going, this is maybe a broad strokes to paint people with, but that's just what you're noticing.
Yes.
Wow.
Because, oh, I don't know. That's why I don't like men's ego so much, because I've been doing this for a long time, and I actually go to a house of a domestic violence victim. Mm-hmm. Right? And then we try to, I'm just an interpreter. They try to rescue, social workers are trying to, you know, help them get out of the house because the husband is abusing you. Like, I had that many, many times. And you cannot think, but this is the trend. And it is the trend.
Right. That there's like some level of people being fetishized.
Yeah.
And then realizing it along the way and going, this is weird.
Yeah.
I got to get out of here. I'm in Canada where everybody's nice and where you can have some breathing room and do what you want. What am I doing?
Yeah. I think that's the realization that they have, I think. And yeah. But I don't want to be jaded. I don't want to be jaded and stereotype these people.
Right.
So it's a constant self-reflection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, are you, as someone who, you're a government employee then?
I'm a freelance.
You're freelance.
Yeah, I freelance everywhere, but yeah.
I would imagine there has to be guidelines, though.
Oh, yeah.
Are you allowed, like, if you go into someone's home with a social worker and someone's in dire straits and... you're the only person in the room who can fluently speak their language. Mm.
if you're emotionally affected by it, do you have to hang back on that in your role as an interpreter? There must be times where you want to look someone in the eye and go, get the hell out of this situation. Mm-hmm. Are you allowed to do that?
No.
Oh, that's brutal, huh?
If I've never got to that point, but if you ever get to that point, you got to talk to whoever is around you.
Yeah.
That I can't do this.
Right.
Like, in court, too. If you can't take it, if this sexual, you know, abuse depiction is too much, I need to address it to the judge.
Right.
Saying, I can't do this anymore.
Right.
Yeah. So you need to be super blunt and you can't really lie to yourself. Like, you got to just follow the guideline and then step aside.
Are you able to, I should mention, so there's some sort of sporting, seems like there's some group of hipsters, right? Would you describe those people? Although one businessman with a tucked in button down shirt, they're either doing some team building exercise or some sort of sporting event is about to break out. That's what you're hearing in the background. As everybody's high-fiving on a field and there are now cones set up. Welcome to a park in Toronto. Okay, so.
They look so happy.
A question following up on that, because that's really fascinating.
Oh,
and I would imagine it has to be one of the hardest parts of the job. Yeah. Are you, you say, like, you've had to be honest with yourself, whether it's by just who you are, how you're built, or through training, you have to be able to have nerves of steel, not get caught up in the emotions of situations. Is it something that you're able to walk away from, or is it something that at the end of the day, sometimes you just need to kind of go and be by yourself and have a drink and find a way to let it go?
This is funny. I used to have a full-time job on top of this. Anxiety was just through the roof. And I went to see a counselor because you encouraged me to.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
All right.
You know, Japan has a lot of stigma in terms of mental health.
Yeah, so does America. I mean, I would imagine.
True.
I live in New York where everyone sees this. So
yeah,
I'm lucky.
You're lucky. So I went to a trauma specialist who works with veterans.
Wow.
I know. I wanted to go. Fortunately, I had insurance that paid for me. So I went to talk to her and she said, yeah, that's your job and you gotta, she was very understanding, but she told me, you gotta kind of evaluate what you can take and what you can't. And I realized, oh, I have an option. You know, I have an option to take it in or not to take that in. So I try to have that in my mind while I'm faced with something that is so difficult. But right. Usually when you're in trial, you're having fun because I love being there. Fortunately, I love my job, so I can just do what I have 100%. But when you go home, you realize, oh, wow. Like, wow.
Yeah.
This guy tried to kill this person, and I was just in front of him. But it won't last for... So I do yoga. I do hot yoga and meditation. without that, I would probably be super, super depressed.
So you've built a system. You have had to build some ways where you're like, this helps me let it go.
Yeah.
Wow.
And not to, ironically, I can't really be with a lot of, I can't be in the Japanese community I found. Because if I interpret it for one person, they might know someone.
Right.
So I try not to be like super close.
Right.
Which is okay.
Right. Because people must want to come to you.
Yeah.
At all times then.
That boundary is hard to build.
Right. Right.
So I do job. So I take it as so when people want to talk to me about something, I just like offer their service. I have my own company. So like, you know, like if they want tutor, I offer them tutoring.
Personally, or you hook them up?
Personally, yeah. And I introduce Japanese kids to Canadian schools. So in that way, I have a lot of relationship between Japan and Canada.
Yeah. What a cool thing to build.
Thank you.
So you basically you've taken your own experience. You're like, what would I have needed to make this smoother?
Yeah.
Let's start a business with my economics degree.
Yeah. I do it with my mom.
That's cool.
My mom is in Tokyo. It's very small. I'm still trying to hustle and make it bigger.
What a cool thing. So is the idea that she helps get to know the people before they come here for school?
Yeah.
And then you're kind of a liaison to meet them and help kind of hold their hand in the early days of the process?
Yeah.
What a cool thing.
I love it. I just love it.
You're the coolest.
Thank you. Because people were so nice to me before, that I think I need to make it 10 times as much, or like 100%, 100,000% more to make it better for other people. And I think that's all I can do as an individual, just to, you know, if you receive love, you can probably love others, you know, more. So that's what I'm kind of trying to do with my business, so that, yeah, I want to make the world a better place. It sounds
what
like
a beautiful
cliche.
Thing.
Very cliche.
Well, no, but that's okay. Oh, we've got dogs. We got a lot of dogs running by now.
Oh, so cute.
A lot of dogs. Let me ask you another question about the court stuff before we okay. move on. Because it was like, to hear you say that, would you say the majority of the divorce proceedings are Caucasian men, mm-hmm. Asian women? It makes it like I didn't think of that, and it did make me realize along the way of like, oh, that there's some intent behind that. So these men have some intent in setting up this type of lifestyle. Mm-hmm. I don't want to dwell on the darkest stuff, but mm-hmm. you've also mentioned a few times that you've dealt with a lot of cases involving violence mm-hmm. and particularly sexual violence. Do you mm-hmm. feel a similar, I don't know if it would divide along racial lines. Mm-hmm. Do you get the sense that some of the people you're interpreting for were targeted because they don't have a command in language? Like, I would imagine there might be scenarios where it's like this person can't explain what happened and that makes them a target.
Oh yeah, that's the perfect prey, the thing to prey on.
Right.
You know, exactly what you said. It's, yeah.
And is that, just in your experience, I know you're not breaking down facts and figures, mm-hmm. Is that also a lot of white guys? Or is that a little bit more of a broad general?
White guys.
Really?
From my experience, yeah.
It's, white guys.
There's only one Asian person, Asian husband. About it.
You've seen a situation like that once with an Asian guy.
Yeah, and I had like around 30.
How long, can I ask how long you've been doing this job?
Three and a half. So it's not too much.
So in 3.5 years, you would say that more often than not, when you see Japanese women put under duress, it is at the hands of a white male.
Yeah. And I don't know.
That's so sad.
I know. It might be, you know, I learned something that is called, well, you know, in Asian countries, it's sad, but it's kind of true that when you're Caucasian or white, you are looked at something more than what we are as Asians. So
you're put up on a pedestal.
Yeah. Like a social, what is it called?
The social ladder.
Yeah, social ladder. So some people might want that. So they aim for something. And then these white men kind of nicely control that. So it's like supply and demand, but it gets really messy afterwards.
It gets exploited fast. Mm-hmm. Man, that's messed up.
It is really messed up.
It is messed up.
Yeah, it is.
It's one of those things, though, doing this job in particular, that's very eye-opening. Mm. Because as a white guy, it's very exasperating. But then you know what I see? You know what you see all the time, especially on the internet, is this defensiveness. And then people start talking in these broad strokes. But then I talk to someone like you where you're like, no, I've been going into courts for 3.5 years. And just in my personal experience, on like a very human level where I'm just doing my job, it happens all the time.
Yeah, so
I think also I'm affected. We should say, mm-hmm. not to make it too political, you and I are also talking, I think, in about half an hour, the Supreme Court of mm-hmm. America. I feel like the whole world is watching right now.
Oh, I watch.
A woman who experienced. So I think that's also why I'm focusing on that, full disclosure. People might be listening going, why is he so caught up in that? Because right now, there is an international eye on a woman who's expressing her experiences with sexual violence, and a literal panel of white men is sitting on a dais 10 feet above her, staring down at her. And I, just before we came here, was watching Lindsey Graham
mm-hmm.
going, this is garbage. This is a... We were like, oh, God. Where he's like, this is just big hoax, man. And you're like, white dudes.
I know.
White dudes.
You know, whether you're Republicans or Democrats, I'm neither of them. I have liberal opinions, I think, because I came from another country to North America.
And you live in Toronto.
And I live in Toronto.
I feel like this is a pretty liberal city in general.
Mm-hmm. However, it doesn't matter which side you're on. You can't really blame what you did or what other males did on politics. Like, it's on a human level, it's not, it shouldn't be this way. And if you were to become a Supreme Court judge, I expect someone who has some morals and some.
You would think.
You know, you would think.
We could at least slow down and take our time and think about it. Lindsey Graham started, you hit me in the gut talking about these white dudes, because he started his comments that I saw with the sentence, "I'm a straight white male, and I know that means I'm supposed to shut up, but I'm not gonna." It's like, oh, dude.
It rages me.
Dude, this is not rocket science.
Yeah.
And I'm not like a self-hating guy. I don't even think I'm overly PC. I'm a comedian, and I think comedians are wary of PC-ness. I think I buy into it more than most comedians, but I'm not like a huge social justice guy. But to start your sentence with that, "I'm a white guy, so I'm supposed to shut up, but I'm not gonna." It's like,
No. Yeah, it kind of ruins the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's history's gonna repeat if you don't, you know, do something about it. And then I guess white men know that they've had a lot of privilege, and they should know, I guess. And it's not their fault. It's just the society kind of created this system. But you don't have to defend yourself for being, you know.
Can I ask your boyfriend in Seattle?
Yeah.
What's this guy's deal?
Okay, so.
White guy?
No, he's.
At this point, are you like, I gotta steer clear of these Caucasian men.
Well, when I was in university and high school, I went to old girls school. So I thought, okay, when I'm in university, I'm gonna date someone who's really not Asian. Like, it's weird. But I've seen Asian people, like, for the, you know, the entire life. So I thought, okay, like, I want something different. And then I've never had a boyfriend until I met my current boyfriend of 4.5 years.
Wow.
And he's Canadian-born Chinese.
Okay.
Yeah. But he got a job. He's from here. We met in university, but he went to work for Seattle. In Seattle.
Yeah. Now, you met in university. It doesn't sound like you dated in university, though.
We dated.
You did?
For a year and a half.
Oh.
And he couldn't get a job that he wanted here. So I was like, maybe, like, the States would work. Yeah, so he went. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to build my career. So you have fun. So, yeah. So he's been there for 3 years. And then probably he's going to be there for another year. And then he'll come back. And meanwhile, I'm just going to do my job and visit him once in a while. He's coming back in 2 weeks. So that's nice.
That's nice.
Yeah. But it kind of, it's like living here, missing home. But you appreciate it that much. So, you know?
Yeah.
It's not too bad. I don't know. People might say otherwise. But
a lot of your closest relationships are people who live very far away.
I know. But you can really build a good relationship with people who are so far away. It's funny.
FaceTime goes a long
way,
huh?
Oh, yeah, FaceTime.
Skype.
And like constant messaging. And I was just talking to my boyfriend. Like, I'm going to go see Chris Gethard.
Oh, God. And he was like, who?
Well, yeah, I told him. It
happens
about
all
you.
The time.
Well, now he's going to be hooked on this show.
We'll see. We'll see. I get it. The people who like my stuff really passionately like it. The rest of the world couldn't be bothered. I got to stop being insecure.
It's nice to have those fans who are into it 100% than having a lot of millions of people.
I feel like the luckiest person in the
That's
world.
Cute.
I really do. I mean, I've been thinking about it a lot lately because I've come to realize my career, and I'm very happy with how things have gone for me, especially the past 3 years, but it's never going to be a certain thing, and things are going to wane and wax and come and go, and I'm just extremely lucky that the people who support me do, because I get to go out and meet them, and they're universally the kindest people.
Oh, that's
awesome.
That's good. That's what you create, though. I think
as a person. It's not about me. Who cares? Who cares about me? Let's talk about you. Let's talk about you. You hear that, guys? That's my. You hear how genuine that is? I meet the beautiful anonymous fans out there in the world. Nice peeps, kind folks. Thank you guys for being who you are. Check out these ads. Use the promo codes. Helps the show when you do. We'll be right back.
The holidays are the busiest time of the year, especially at the post office. That's why we use Stamps.com. Save time during the hectic holiday season. Stamps.com brings all the services of the U.S. Post Office right to your desktop. Buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail using your own computer and printer. Then the mail carrier picks it up. You print postage any day, anytime. Stamps.com not only saves you time, it saves you money. Stamps.com helps you print the right amount of postage every time. Never overpay again. With all the time and money you'll save, Stamps.com is the best gift you can give yourself this holiday season. Okay, I use Stamps.com. Post office is at the end of my block, and all the people there are very nice. I love the service, love the tradition of it, but sometimes you just don't have that time. And we're not kidding, right? Like, holidays, these lines get long, and you could be standing on the line to send something to your loved ones, or maybe get some of that time back, actually hang out with your loved ones. It's a cool thing. Right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps.com service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus postage and a digital scale without long-term commitments. Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in beautiful. That's Stamps.com. Enter beautiful. Thanks again to all of our sponsors. Now let's finish off the conversation. Who cares? Who cares about me? Let's talk about you. Let's talk about you.
But I learned, I was reading this book, and then I learned that your success or your appreciation in life comes from who you surround with or who you happen to be with. Mm-hmm. Your environment really changes who you are. So if you feel lucky, I think it's not only because it's you, but it's because of the people around you. And I think we shouldn't forget that. And if people don't have that, you should really help them as a citizen to kind of take care of that and then give love to others who don't necessarily have that.
That's cool. That sounds like what you're all about.
Yeah. It's really easy to say. But it's harder to do. Yeah, it's harder to do. But I started from donating blood. I'm an avid blood donor.
Avid?
Well, yeah.
You describe yourself as an avid. How often does one donate blood?
I think females shouldn't donate more than twice a year.
Yeah.
I did three times, and then I depleted my iron, so I had to wait for a long time. But I do every four or five months.
So you really want to just go out and help the world in the small ways that you can.
Yeah. I'm not Bill Gates, but I think there's a micro level that I can contribute to the society. And I want others, I don't expect others to do the same.
Yeah.
But knowing that these people exist, like, would be better for other people. I don't know. So I like it. And I want to donate my body. I don't need funerals. Like, I just want to, like, when
every
I'm...
Every organ goes to science with you.
Oh, yeah. Or I want to donate my entire body to a medical school and they can just rip me apart.
Have you ever heard of the body farm?
No.
You'd like this, I think.
What's this?
It's gross.
Okay.
I think it's in Tennessee, if I remember right. It's a forensic science school.
Ooh.
Where, you know, people who work in law enforcement, who need to know, where you can donate your whole body. And if I remember, I might have my facts wrong. It's a fascinating place. It's pretty macabre. You can donate your whole body, and they will basically use your body to emulate a crime scene so that forensic scientists can learn. Okay, so we're gonna leave your body out in the rain behind a shed and then act like you're a murder victim so that potential forensic scientists can go, okay, so if a body's been left out in the rain for 4 days, what are the differences? If it's been in the hot sun versus the snow,
wow,
they leave it out. They go, okay, so if this part of the body's been cut open, how is that going to, how can you still determine how many days this person's been dead? So you could give your body to the body farm in Tennessee.
Yeah.
They'll just throw it out in the snow and let some people go to town.
Yeah, I guess so. Because I don't need myself. I don't want to take up the space. I don't understand the concept of you being in the coffin, in a coffin.
Yeah.
Like, you take up so much space in this world, but you're kind of dead. Oh, you are dead. So, you know, I'd rather be elsewhere being used. Well, being used.
Give back to the world, even when you're not a part of it anymore.
Yeah, because you're essentially a living, used to be a living organism, so.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay, can I ask you
a more fun question, because you and I have dealt with some heavy stuff, and so now some philosophical stuff. It is my understanding. Mm-hmm. Oh, we have someone. Just to explain the noise, we have someone who is an employee of the city who's coming by to deal with some removal of garbage can issues. So you're hearing that in the background. If you're hearing, okay. So my understanding is that when people are immersing themselves in a new culture and learning a new language, very often they will lean into pop culture to help them do that. Was that true in your case?
Oh yeah, I still listen to all these pop singers, and just like. It's a very fast way of learning English.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
What are the pop culture vehicles you latched onto?
I don't have like a lot of favorites. I just sing everyone's songs. Like One Direction. It's just, if you want to sing fast, you can just start slowly and then you kind of like, you know, gauge after using One Direction songs. Oh, that's embarrassing.
Mm-hmm. One Direction. Glad to hear it.
And Justin Bieber, it's just, you know, like, you gotta be kind of, like, in tune. Not in tune. Like, you gotta sing and you'll have to like it. You know, it's really hard for a foreigner who doesn't speak the language that you're trying to learn to sing. That's the hardest thing. So I want to be able to rap in the future. And I think that's when I can say, yo, guys, I can speak English.
So a major goal of yours is to be able to rap?
Yeah.
I can't rap, and I would say I have a good command of English.
I was practicing Nicki Minaj, but everything was like F words and everything, so I kind of stopped. But I want to do it. I want to write my rap. Oh, that'd be cool, rap song.
Here's a question that might be impossible for you to answer. How much of... How would I phrase it? How much of your current personality,
because
you have so much energy, positivity, how much of that would you say has been informed by your experience learning English versus how much of this was who you were in Japan? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. 60, 40. So 60% came from my experience being here and learning English and immersing myself in the culture. And then 40% was what I had.
So there's 40% of you where you're like, that's the core, that's just me, that's my personality, that's what I was born with.
But I could not express that in Japan fully. So, yeah, it's 40%. And, yeah, I was a weird kid. I used to tell my mom, like, Mom, I want to be an astronaut. And then she used to say, oh, if you want to be one, like, ha, ha, ha. And I wanted to be everything. But I never ended up being one.
Do you find when you go back to Japan, do you lock back into who you were for those first 16 years of your life a little
more? Yeah, you kind of like don't explore that much. You're just like a little kid at home in a suburban city.
Yeah.
And I just don't like it. Well, sorry, my mom and my dad... But yeah, it kind of, you go back.
Do your parents have a sense of the current day you, or would they be surprised?
Oh, they know me because my mom calls me every day.
Every day?
Every day.
Wow.
So she knows me. My dad calls me, I don't know, whenever I'm talking to my mom.
Yeah.
He calls me. Yeah, he knows. But it's, I don't know what they think. I should have a deep talk with them.
How do they feel about your gig and your desire to help people? They must be proud.
Yeah, I think they are proud, but they're kind of scared because I never know what kind of situation I'm going to get into.
Yeah.
You know, I can be in court. I can be in a function where all the politicians are. You can be in a situation... Oh, I was actually in a power generating plant helping... engineers work on these things.
Oh, wow.
In minus 10. So you never know where you're
like gonna... Like a power plant.
It was a nuclear... What was it? Coal? I don't know. Yeah, it's not nuclear.
But a power plant that's like a major... So this is like a piece of the infrastructure of Canada.
Yeah, they were building it, but they didn't have any walls. They only had like motors and stuff.
Yeah.
So that's it.
But so there's Japanese scientists.
Mm-hmm.
Experts in their field, I'd imagine. talking about high-level things that you're not necessarily trained in.
Mm-hmm.
And if you mess up the translations, this might negatively affect the entire power grid of a certain section of Canada.
Yeah. Like, can I scratch this part of this motor? And then if a Canadian says no, like, they need to discuss things. Yeah, so I'm an interpreter for that.
That sounds harsh.
And yeah. And when in court, you're under oath.
Yeah.
And when you're in that kind of like science-related, STEM-related fields, yeah, you're kind of responsible.
That's crazy to think about.
And I'm only 27, so...
You're like a bridge between humans.
I like that expression, yeah. That's cool.
Are there times when you're in court
mm-hmm.
where someone's being questioned, cross-examined,
mm-hmm.
and they're giving answers, and you're sitting there in your head going, I know what you really mean.
Oh, yeah.
That's got to be hard.
Oh, lawyers do that all the time. Yeah.
They're trying to box people in
mm-hmm.
and win.
But judges are pretty smart, so they catch that. And then when the questions are too complicated, my interpretation from English to Japanese is complicated, so witness can't understand.
Yeah.
So the lawyer needs to kind of rephrase it, or the judge needs to tell the lawyer to rephrase it.
Right.
Yeah.
That's got to be tough.
It is tough. Oh, I hate cross-examination because it's intense.
Yeah. You watch people get picked apart.
Oh, yeah. And then they cry in front of me.
And then you've got to not feel the crying, but accurately represent the crying.
I tear up sometimes, but I can't shed tears.
Wow.
It's all on record.
Wow. So there's times where somebody's like dealing with their oppressive husband
mm-hmm.
and you feel them giving an answer that's not the whole answer. And you're like, just say it. Just say what you mean.
After the fact, yeah.
Yeah. So in the moment, you're able to just
yeah.
shut it off and be a conduit.
Mm-hmm. But wow. After that, I'm like, wow, this is a shitty person. But you can't really say that.
Yeah.
You can just think about it. I just said that.
Of course not. Of course not. Wow.
But it's interesting, though, how this kind of like relationship turned into something super terrible. Because love is a weird thing, I think. And there's so many factors. Maybe you have kids and you're naturally not, you know, prone to stress and you don't know how to react. And
yeah.
That's when there's another person in your life, you don't know how to control it. I think people need to learn how to react to certain things and handle it
yeah.
properly. But I don't know where you can learn that.
We've got about 8 minutes left.
Oh, okay.
This has flown by.
I know. I'm having a great time.
I've had a lot of fun. Thank you for hanging out with me.
Thank you.
I will say, I have to ask,
mm-hmm.
you mentioned when you go back to Japan, you eat a lot of the food
uh-huh.
that you miss.
Mm-hmm.
This has become a little bit of a trope on the podcast. I try to avoid it, but I do have to ask,
okay.
What do I need to be experienced? Because I live in New York. I can get most stuff.
Oh, yeah, I know.
And I know there's a section of the East Village that's like three blocks that's like Little Japan. And
okay.
they have, you know what they have that I really like? But I wonder, I don't know if this is like some Americanized bullshit.
Okay.
It's those octopus balls.
Takoyaki!
Yeah. Takoyaki. That's good stuff.
It's a good stuff.
That's for real stuff.
Huh? Oh, for real.
Yeah.
I
like those.
Takoyaki is good. Okonomiyaki is good. Okonomiyaki is cabbage pancakes.
Cabbage pancakes.
So it's like takoyaki, but it's flatter.
Okay.
And you can put anything you want. You can put noodles, you can put cabbage, you can put like mochi. You can put anything. So okonomiyaki. I think there's a place in New York. I was in Manhattan a year ago. Oh, no. Last winter. They have everything. And I really recommend good ramen
mm-hmm.
owned by a, I don't know, Japanese company.
Yeah.
Because they know what they're doing. Ramen. Have you had oden?
I don't know.
Okay. Oden is like a hot pot.
Okay.
But it has like broth in it, and you have Japanese daikon radish in it, and it's really soft, and you can put fish, But Google it, yeah. O-D-E.
Do you have your spots in Toronto where you're like, that's the real shit? That's where I go when I'm just in the mood to for home?
Yeah, in Toronto, there's a restaurant called Emate. E-M-A-T-E-I. And that's real good stuff. And then Konnichiwa. The there's one place called Konnichiwa. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
Two. You got two that you go
to.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's nice. Are you a Canadian citizen?
No, I'm a permanent resident.
Do you plan on getting citizenship?
So, there's a problem. Japan doesn't allow dual citizenship.
Ah. So you'd have to renounce your Japanese citizenship.
Yeah, if I want to tell the government, yeah.
Wow.
Well, some people secretly have both.
Secretly? How can you pull that off?
Well, you can kind of go back to Japan or go to the consulate and then get a new passport, like a Japanese passport for 10 years. Well, you get a Canadian passport when you become the citizen.
What are the benefits there?
I don't know. Well, I don't really know. You can vote in both countries, but it's really...
You can participate fully in your politics.
I don't know. I think you need to get rid of your Japanese passport now. I think the system's changing.
Do you have any desire to get your citizenship, or are you happy being a permanent resident?
Well, I want to vote in this country because I live here and I care about this country. But I'll wait until I have potential. I have kids, I think, in the future.
Yeah.
Because I want my kids to have the Japanese citizenship.
Oh, you do?
They can have dual citizenship. Kids can have dual citizenships until they're 21, I think.
And then they have to decide?
Kind of decide.
Wow.
Some people never do, and that's, you know, not a legal way to do, but yeah.
Yeah. So is Canada... I know in the States, if a child is born in America, they're an American citizen. Mm-hmm. Is that similar in Canada?
Yeah, Canada's the same. But in Japan, one of the parents need to be Japanese.
Wow.
Yeah, I think so.
Now, can I ask your boyfriend? Mm-hmm. You said he's Chinese-Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
Was he born in China?
No, he was born here.
He was born here.
Yeah. His parents were born here. So, yeah, there's not...
So there's not a world in which your kids... If things last with this boyfriend, mm-hmm. I'm not making assumptions.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a world in which... I should note, you're now using your hand to further block the windscreen. The wind is kicking in, and although these mics have giant fuzzy windscreens, you are using your hands to help block the wind. It was a very, very thoughtful move. So there's no world in which if you have kids with this guy that they're going to be Canadian, Japanese, and Chinese citizens.
No.
That would be so awesome.
I wonder
if that's a thing, if you can have triple citizenship.
Oh, my, I think people from Hong Kong has British and Chinese passport,
yeah.
And you can apply to those two. Oh, I might be totally wrong, but some people have like three different.
Man, I got two, and now I'm feeling...
Oh, yeah, you have two.
Now I'm feeling like I'm behind the curve. Wish I had three citizenships.
Two more minutes.
What do you want to put on record that we haven't covered yet? Do you feel satisfied with this experience?
Oh, I'm very satisfied. I just love the fact that I found Beautiful Anonymous. It taught me so much through listening to a lot of people. There are so many different people, like, you know, that who have talked to you, spoke to you, and you learn a lot. There's different ways of living, different ways of feeling things, different ways of expressing when they're talking to you, different personalities. I think they are so also important, especially in this world where, you know, stuff are kind of unsettling.
Yeah.
I think we can be more nicer and more compassionate. And if I can contribute to if that, you're contributing to, you know, making the world a better
place.
You
are in a much realer way.
No,
I'm an entertainer.
No.
That's all fake at the end of the day.
No.
You're helping individual humans who have been through bad things be able to express themselves in a clear way so that the law might be more fair to them.
Mm.
That's a lot more important than some
dude
with a podcast reading ads about underwear.
Oh, thanks for partnering up with Calm. I've been following them for like 7 years.
My mom loves Calm. My mom does Calm. She was very excited that they were an advertiser.
Oh, really?
I've been using them for years.
Yeah. Oh,
sorry about that impression, Mom, but you know it's on target.
Hi, Sally. Yeah. I've been doing that. My anxiety got significantly better after that. I'm not paid for this.
Look at that. Jared, we got to talk to the sales team, maybe try to get Calm to buy an ad on this episode. Synergy, they call that. Synergy.
So yeah, meditation is great, guys. Meditation is everything.
Yeah, that's what keeps you going in the face of all the darkness you help people
darkness,
navigate.
Yeah, and you can't complain that because you get to experience a lot of great things at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you're super cool. I feel lucky that I got to meet you.
Oh, I feel the same too. Oh, thank you so much. I feel so relaxed.
Yeah, I feel good. And I didn't get much sleep last night.
Oh, okay.
And I was kind of like debating whether or not we should even do this.
Oh.
And I'm really glad we did.
Oh, thank you. I'm so glad I responded to your tweet.
Oh, yeah. Well done. I got to go find some of those cabbage pancakes.
Oh, yeah. Okonomiyaki. Yeah.
All right. That's that. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. This is...
It was so fun.
Can I shake your hand?
Please. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much for sitting down, talking with me awkwardly on a bench with our big, obtrusive, giant fuzzy microphones. Thank you so much. Quote unquote caller. It was so cool to talk to you. And honestly, you are doing stuff that helps other people, and that always blows me away to see that in action. Thank you for doing what you do. Thanks to Jared for traveling all the way to Toronto with me and handling the setup of that. And also, Champion, he managed to pay off a busker to stop playing music in the background. And it was very, I tell you, he went into pro mode on that. Paid off a busker to quiet down for an hour. That's producing right there. Thank you, Jared. Thank you, Harry Nelson. Thank you, Justin Linville. Thank you, Shell Shag, for the music. Thank you to everybody who supports my live work, chrisgeth.com. Again, I got shows coming up in New York City, Queens, and Brooklyn. Check it out, chrisgeth.com, if you want the tickets. Hey, if you like Beautiful Anonymous, one thing you can do to help, you go to Apple Podcasts. You rate, you review, you subscribe. It helps the show a lot when you do. That's all the business. We'll see you next time. Support comes from Universal Pictures, presenting their new film, Welcome to Marwen. From the groundbreaking director of Forrest Gump comes the boldest and most original film of the year, based on an inspirational true story and starring Academy Award nominee Steve Carell and Leslie Mann, Welcome to Marwen celebrates the power of friendship, hope, and healing. In theaters this Christmas. Next time on Beautiful Anonymous... We are from a college student who's one of the least traditional college students I've ever encountered.
I know, the cinematic version of college where you booze it up for a couple years or whatever. Right. And I'm like trying to keep myself in check with that. But yeah.
I just rewatched Old School on a plane a couple months ago. I rewatched Old School. You're living the real life version.
I am.
You're Frank the Tank.
I want to go freaking blood. That's all I want to do.
You're Frank the Tank, baby.
Frank the Tank. Frank's back, baby. Frank's back.
That's next time on Beautiful Anonymous.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.